Welcome to Our Plant Stories. It's a podcast where we share our plant stories and learn more about the plant, including how to grow it. Now, I've had some lovely messages over the past year from people who have started to grow the plants featured in the podcast. They've planted peonies and passion flowers. Some have taken fig tree cuttings. And someone has even done a graft of a Peasgood's Nonsuch. But a word of warning. You may want to think very hard before rushing out to buy today's plant.
Well, every single leaf can live for 25 years. So it's a perennial, it's a real perennial. So every leaf, if it's produced, it just stays there for 20, 25 years.
It's a tree with a fascinating history. But let's start with the story. When Andrea Conrath moved to her current house 12 years ago, it had a monkey puzzle tree in the front garden. It's tall.
So I'm not very good at heights, but it's about a metre off the telephone wire at the moment. It looks like it's going to impinge on the telephone wire quite soon, and I haven't quite worked out what we do about that because it's very sharp and it could cut through it, I think.
So how do you feel about this monkey puzzle tree? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you tolerate it? What's your feeling about it?
So I suppose it's changed over the years. So I think when I first moved here, it was on the list of things that had to go. Amongst them were, you know, plastic wooden windows and what else? Frilly peach shower curtains. So it was in that category of things that were just not my taste. But I say over the years, I've probably developed a love-hate relationship with it, I would say. Maybe love is too strong a word for it. Probably a respect for it. A respect for it because of its backstory, a respect for it because of just the majesty of it in the middle of the garden, really.
And who planted it?
So this goes to the story of where the respect comes from, really. There's a bit of a backstory to it that ensured its survival. So the previous occupants of the house were really devoted gardeners, and the back garden I thought was spectacular. It was one of the main features that persuaded me to buy a house which wasn't my taste, really. And the garden came with, the lady was lovely that's selling it. She was a widow and she gave us some basic written instructions about how to look after the garden, plus a stack of plant books. And she also gave me a box of photos that had, you know, the history of the garden, really. It was how the garden was when they first bought it and how it evolved and how the pond had been redeveloped and various other things. And included in this box of photos were several photos of the monkey puzzle tree from its very beginnings when it was a gangly teenager, and you can't believe the size of it now compared to what it was, and then various photos showing it growing up, really. And also she took her time to take those photos out and show me them. Not every photo of the garden, but the monkey puzzle tree ones she took her time to take out, because there was a bit of a story. It was a gift to her late husband, Jeff, on his 50th birthday. And included in the photo bundle is a picture of him standing proudly next to his monkey puzzle tree when it was first planted. And shortly after that, it got stolen. And so they had to go out and buy a replacement for it. And the monkey puzzle tree was then planted in the front garden, because I think it was stolen out of the back garden originally, alongside lots of miniature conifers. And they were all tethered down with wire and metal poles. And the metal pole that was tethering the monkey puzzle tree at the time is still there. And it's impossible to get out. And it sort of speaks to me every time I think I might go and dig it up or do something to it or cut a branch off, that this metal pole is there because it's always meant to be there.
And what do other people, when they're passing, do people stop and talk about it if you're working out in the front garden?
Yeah, so I suppose that's part of the reason why I've kept it, which is the sort of history of it. But the other reason is it's sort of a bit of a landmark. It's a landmark for people coming to the house. So, you know, it's quite hard to see our front door number, but it's really easy to see the monkey puzzle tree. So you just tell people to look out for this slightly spiky tree that looks like a big cactus, and people always find it. I remember my dad, when he used to drive down the road, I always know where your house is because I just look out for that tree. But it's also a talking point. So if you're in the front garden and passers-by just stop, and they don't talk about anything else. They don't talk about the pretty roses I've planted or the bay trees or anything. They talk about the monkey puzzle tree. And it's, like, fascinating. There's been a granddad with his grandson who told his grandson that monkeys lived up it, and the grandson spent a few minutes trying to find the monkeys. There have been people that have asked me, you know, how, what it is and how to grow it, and I'm not an expert by any means. It thrives on neglect in our garden, at least. And people that have asked me about seeds and eating the seeds, because the seeds, the nuts in the seeds are edible, apparently, although I've never tried them. So it's fascinating. And it's also, over the years, grown these great big pods that are look like huge coconuts, which are the seed pods. And they're huge. They look quite dangerous, like if they'd fall on someone's head, they could do damage. But in fact, what happens is, when there's wind or rain, they explode. And the seeds go everywhere, which is part of the reason I don't like it as well. And thousands of seeds you get after a rainy spell, and it keeps producing more of these pods because it's obviously trying to reproduce. But most of the seeds are not fertile, so they don't actually have the nuts in that you can eat. But sort of probably one in 100 or one in several hundred seeds happens to be fertile. And it's a mystery to me how they get fertile, because there's no monkey puzzle trees in the vicinity. And I know that there's very few of them that are fertile, because my dad wanted to grow one from these nuts. And so I used to sort through these and bring him bags full of them. And then he'd tell me they all weren't fertile. And I'd eventually find one, and he would grow it, and it would sort of rot off for whatever reason. But he actually did grow one. And there's one in my mum's dining room. It's several years old, but it's only about 2 centimetres tall. It has a very long root, but the actual tree is tiny.
A little while back, I had met the perfect person to talk about this tree. Eduardo Olarte is a horticulturalist. He is from Chile, and his PhD was in native plants from Chile. And back in 2008, he was one of the co-founders of the Chilean Native Plants Conference.
Are they called monkey puzzle trees in Chile, or is that a sort of English term?
They didn't have a common name for the species until the 1800s. In 1850, was very rare in gardens still, you know. The first plant he arrived in at the late 1797 or something like that. So by 1850, were very few specimens in England. But there was one at the house of Sir William Molesworth in Cornwall. He had one in the garden, and he has a gathering and a dinner, and visiting the garden, someone said, he introduced the plant, and says it's a pine from Chile. And someone said, well, that tree would puzzle even to a monkey to climb it, because it's so spiky. It's not very children.
Friendly,
yes, thank you. From that went to the monkey puzzler, and then to the name that the monkey puzzle tree. That, no, we don't call it in Spanish. It's Araucaria, so it's the same name as in Latin, and our indigenous people call it Pehuen. So it's one of the sacred trees for our people, Pehuen. Especially for a group of them, the Mapuche people. Mapuche people is huge in between Chile and Argentina. It's a huge group of people, and there was a subgroup called Pehuenches, you know. So Pehuen is the tree, and Pehuenche is people from of the Pehuen. And they lived out of this tree half of the year. There's still some communities go, you know, as a tradition. They go and camping and camp up in the mountains and collect during the autumn the fruits, the nuts, and they make, you know, a ceremony out of it. Is it the national tree? Is the national tree of the country as well since the early 70s.
So how does this tree end up in English gardens? Well, for this plant story and its offshoot, I've discovered there are tales that become part of folklore, and we're going to be untangling some of them over the next couple of episodes. The first time I met Eduardo, we were talking about the story of the original monkey puzzle tree nuts, or seeds, being stolen from a dinner table. Only, being Chilean, he knew that any nuts being served would have been cooked, so not viable.
Yes, so you planted the seed in me because I didn't know much about the English story about monkey puzzle tree. So I went to research, and it was Archibald Menzies, who was, I have here, on this HMS Discovery back in 1785. They were visiting Chile, and the whole crew, starting with the Captain Vancouver, what's his name, George Vancouver, they were invited to have dinner in Santiago by the governor of Chile back then. And the governor of Chile was back then an Irishman working for the Spanish crown called Ambrosio Bernardo O'Higgins. Ambrosio O'Higgins for all the Chileans. And he was the governor of Chile, and years later he was the viceroy of Peru, which was the most important viceroy in the whole empire, the Spanish empire. So he was very important, but he was British. Yeah, he was British, working for the Spanish crown. And they were invited for dinner, and the story says that they were served with a dish of piñones, which is the fruit of the monkey puzzle tree. And the story says that Menzies took some seeds and put it in his pocket. But adding up dates and, you know, botany, probably that's not the case.
Because you told me about the nuts, they're cooked.
Yes, they. You can eat them raw, but it's not very palatable. So the main way to actually eat the seeds are either roasted or boiled, and you can make even marron glacé, because the taste is very similar to chestnut. And also, now I was reading more about the Menzies story, and this dinner was taken in April of 1795. And that's very important because April is the peak of the harvesting season. And another thing that I discovered reading more about Ambrosio Higgins, the governor of Chile, that he has, by then, 1795, he had been in the country for more than 20 years. And he spent most of the time in southern Chile, and specifically in the slopes of the Andes, where he bought a piece of land, and he was in contact with the indigenous people. So he knew about, for sure, I mean, for sure, he knew about the nuts, and they were edible and everything. So chances are that Menzies was amazed, but probably O'Higgins had some seeds there available for him to take as many as he wanted.
So he possibly gave them to him. He didn't steal them off the table, is what we're thinking, basically, because it's like senseless, and they stole them off the table and you went, they're cooked. Would that work?
Very cooked. Very, very cooked.
So do we know when it suddenly started to become super popular in the UK? Because you obviously find quite large specimens in certain places, you know, and they've got them in queue.
I think it's all these stories that they were adding up. You know, Queen Victoria visited Dropmore, near Windsor. There was another specimen in Dropmore, who actually grew the best. You know, grew up to 20 meters, and Queen Victoria visited the garden in the 1840s. And asked for a plant to be gifted to Prince Albert.
I mentioned there's going to be an offshoot, so just remember the name Dropmore, because we are going to come back to that most famous monkey puzzle via someone's great-great-grandfather. And it's a brilliant story. Meanwhile, Andrea had more questions for Eduardo.
So I've been in this house for 12 years, and it was already here when I came. It was already quite big. Mm-hmm. And it, when I moved here, it had these big coconut things on it, big like coconut-like seed pods. And it's just getting more and more of them, loads and loads of them at the moment. And they burst in the wind and scatter seeds like everywhere.
Yes.
And so when I get the seeds, quite a lot of them don't have any nuts in, but just, you know, probably one in, say, 100 or something has a seed in it, some of which we've tried to grow. And I didn't understand how those seeds were getting fertile, because there's not another monkey puzzle tree in the vicinity at all. Mm. So I assume it's a female tree. And I just didn't know what was going on and why most of them aren't fertile, but I just occasionally get one that is.
Yes, yeah, so the species Araucaria araucana is a dioecious species. So mostly 90% of the specimens or more, they have only one sex. So either male or female plants. A very small percentage, probably less than 5% of the population, can have both sex in the same plant. I've never seen one. I haven't looked much, but at least here in London, I haven't seen any monoecious. So it's the cone, the female cone, needs to have at least a male plant, not farther than, let's say, 100 meters, for the wind to blow some pollen during the spring. So chances are that your poor plant, which is very, do you know more or less what age is that tree?
So I think it's probably going on for 40 years old, around about. So I think probably when I came here, it was about 30 years old. So it's probably it's between 30 and 40 years old.
Yes. So yeah, because the plants reach maturity, sexual maturity, around 25 years. So after 25 years, they start to produce some kind of flower.
So if someone's got a monkey puzzle tree and they want to know whether they've bought a male or female tree, how do they know?
They have to wait. They have to wait 25 years, at least. Sometimes it takes only 15 years to produce flowers, either female or male flowers. Cones, and yes, so all the seeds that you are seeing in your plant are probably vain. They are not being fertilized because there is no pollen around. The same plant doesn't produce pollen itself.
And so do you think what's happening is somewhere? I mean, 100 meters is quite far, I suppose, in a suburban setting. Somewhere there's a little bit of pollen coming. That's incidentally fertilizing a few of them or something.
Yes, yes. And also I have seen, you know, it's very unlikely, but it could be some birds carrying some little pollen maybe. But again, it's if you walk around your neighborhood, if there is no monkey puzzle tree other than that, it's so the seed that you are seeing that is growing a little bit more than the other ones. There could be different things, but it could be a false fertilization, for example, and the seed things that is growing. There could be something more different, but very unlikely it is going to be a fertile seed.
Yeah, we've had three of them we've grown. So three of the seeds, I mean, some of them have rotted in the process because I wasn't quite sure how to grow them. But my dad has grown two of them, and he, you know, he's passed away now, but he has a seedling that he grew about 2 years ago, and it's got a massive big root, a huge root. You keep having to repot it for the root, but the actual seed is only the little seedling. It's about 2 centimeters after 2 years. It's tiny.
Wow. That's really interesting because I don't know in the pine family itself, but some species can produce their own embryo inside the seeds without any fertilization. So those plants are basically clones of the mother plant. I didn't know this about Araucaria araucana, the monkey puzzle tree. Maybe it's described somewhere. I can find out a little bit more. But it's very interesting, really, really interesting. Yes, that you could have actual fertile seeds in a isolated female plant.
And is that typical though, that it would only grow about that much in 2 years? So tiny amount of
plants. Yes, tiny. For at least 3 years. two or three years, it will be very tiny. But after 5 years, you would have at least one branching, for three stems around 5 years, depending on the conditions, of course, the
Well, it's been
environmental
grown
conditions.
inside, so it's just like a house plant. I don't know if that's the right conditions. I mean, it's just because it's so small to put outside, I suppose.
No, it needs lots of sun. It actually doesn't compete well when there is another tree next to it and the seedling is next to the shade of, so it doesn't grow much. So it really needs space. It needs sunlight, and especially during the summer. And the length of the root is because they are adapted to colonize mountains. So there's no soil, actually, topsoil. It's just they go ballistic
Yeah, no,
all
the
the way
root is
down as they can.
about five times as, six times as big as the plant, at least.
So do these trees grow differently in here in the UK to how they would in Chile in terms of the speed at which they grow in the UK?
So the species is adapted to high altitudes, so cold environment, cold climate, and also they're adapted to drought as well, and very well drained soils, like mountain soils. But basically, the temperature that the plant thrives is between 10 and 20 Celsius during the summer, and it can stand up down to minus 20, as has been recorded. So, and it's the structure it's of the plant is basically to support snow. So when it snows down, the branches are almost empty because they're so thin, so that they can stand snow lots, I mean meters and meters of snow. And the only thing that you can see in the mountains is just these little umbrellas ching, 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 over the mountain, the snow mountains. So it's that's the environment that they were adapted to. So those trees are in a very rough environment, so they don't. The summer is very short, just like here. It's in southern Chile. It's not central, or it's not from the wine country. So it's very much like England, Scotland, that kind of environment up in the mountains. So here is it somehow you have between 10 and 20 Celsius. A lot of during most of the year you have between 10 and 20. So it grows much faster here. Because it's in a garden, you don't have drought season here. In Chile, we have a small drought season, dry season, and also in the mountains, the amount of water that the soil can gather is really small. So these plants are colonizers, and as such, they grow very slow. They don't care about time. They have hundreds of years to grow, so they don't care about speed. When you go and visit in the mountains, my major professor, we went together up the mountains, and he's from Connecticut, and he said, "Oh, we just need some dinosaurs around, for to complete the landscape." It's just from that era. He says that there is so different. Even the trunk is so straight and big and long, and the surface of the trunk is adapted to wildfires, but not produced by lightning, but producing by volcanoes. I mean, you go to the to the this landscape, to these national parks, and it's always the same: a lake, a mountain covered with monkey puzzle trees, and a volcano in the background next to it with a snow cap. And once in a while there's an earthquake around. So they are adapted to these very harsh conditions, including, volcanic eruptions.
So the fact that I don't give mine any love and attention doesn't really
Yes.
matter. It's probably quite happy in a suburban garden being
Yes.
neglected.
After it establishes, the plant is very difficult to kill.
Is it as old as
We don't know.
dinosaurs?
But there are very similar species that are what's the name of the when you get fossils? So you get fossils very similar to these ones. So chances are during the Cretaceous, so during the same period of the dinosaurs. So it's very likely that they had at least a very similar related species at the same time, but evolution is not like that, you know. So probably it evolved in the current species, which is very similar. So maybe they didn't change much. So yes, so it's probably maybe they were a little taller, a little wider, a little here and there, but very, very similar, very similar.
Andrea, have you got any more questions about your monkey puzzle?
Well, I was just going to ask, do you love them or hate
them? Me? I love it. It's our national tree. I don't have any option. No, I love it. I love it because it's so unique. And also seeing them in nature, in the wild, you know, these woodlands of this incredible. I mean, my very first trip to southern Chile, 800 kilometers south from Santiago, so it's a long country, was when I was 15 with my parents and my brother. And we went to this national park, one of the most famous one, Conguillío, another native word. Anyway, so it's, you know, it's the lake, the mountains, the volcano, and the monkey puzzle tree, woodland. And you could see in some places that there was a volcanic eruption not far ago. I mean, 1960s, and that was 1985. But you could see that it was meters of volcanic ashes under the trunk. So they even survived that. So it's knowing that and the shape and everything is just amazing to see. So yeah, it's our national tree. So yeah, people love it. Yeah.
Does this make you feel any differently about your tree? Are you seeing your tree in a slightly different light now, Andrea?
Well, I feel like I need to respect it a bit more.
Even more?
Particularly because it produces little seedlings sometimes, yes, that I can propagate. So I'm sort of still intrigued about that.
We have to investigate that, yeah.
Now, we always do learn how to grow the plant. And for this, we turn to Eduardo. We have been warned. It may take a little while to get going, but once it does, it'll grow fast.
Maybe the people don't know the speed of the growth. Maybe they think that that's a very old and it's 100 years old. No, probably it's only 20 years old. In 10 years, you will have a good size, a good front garden size plant, the full thing, in 15 years for sure. So I think it's still popular because of its looks, it's so interesting, it's so unique, but only for a very big garden, way in the back, as a focal point, or for, you know, parks, public parks, and things like that. I've seen them in public parks all over London, for sure. They keep planting them, which is lovely to see, but always with a protection. Too.
So if I want to grow one, I would buy it from a nursery, presumably, probably.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I need to plant it somewhere with plenty of space.
Away from traffic of people. You have to avoid, because you will have to move it or cut it down if it's too close to a pavement or to the entrance of the house or to the playground or whatever. So you have to, not only a big space, but away from traffic of people. And in the matter of soil, it's quite forgiving. The only thing that it doesn't like is poor drainage. It's a mountainous species, so it's used to perfect drainage. It doesn't like to be, you know, with their feet wet all the time. No, that's not for the monkey puzzle tree. And plenty of sunlight, as we were discussing with Andrea before. Plenty of sunlight. It's a tree. It's a pine. So it needs, it's not an interior plant. It can survive because it doesn't want to die. it's a very rough species, but it will not grow the best in as an interior plant. So it's a full sun plant. And the temperature wise, the one in Edinburgh is happy and outside with no problem. I would say that Scotland, probably southern Scotland, is the limit. Although if you have a protected area in Scotland, especially in the west coast of Scotland, it can even grow there with no problem. There are some specimens in Norway, actually, so southern Norway, but still Norway.
And in terms of time and how fast it will grow in 10 years, what would I be looking at, do you think? How tall might it grow in 10 years?
The first years, the growth is quite slow, but after the year number 10, let's say, you could expect, at least 30 centimeters of growth every year, which is more or less the length of between one node and the next one. So every year we produce one layer of branches.
So it's not really a tree for a pot, really, is it? You've got to have a very large space.
No. Only the first 5 years, 10 years are the longest, I would say. Because again, the root needs to grow down also. So it will start by spiraling and spiraling and spiraling. Eventually it will strangulate itself if you keep it in the pot.
Right, so you could put it in a pot to start with. You've got about 5 years before you have got to
Yeah,
move to
yeah.
somewhere where you have a very
Yeah.
large space with nothing else
Yeah.
around where you can plant
Yeah.
it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Two things about the seed. It's a CITES species, so it's protected, and the international trade is almost impossible. You have to register. So to get a hold of seeds, it has to be local seeds. So probably there are some seeds that you can buy or share with someone who has a female tree. With female trees around it, and yes, after you harvest the seed, you have only around not more than 2 months to actually plant the seed. So it doesn't stay long, viable.
Viable.
Yeah. So you have to plant it very soon, and also very shallow, very shallow. Just the tip of the seed inside, and the rest of the seed outside.
Yeah, because I had one and I buried it all and it grew
Yes,
this
they
massive
are.
root, but
Yeah.
then it rotted.
The thought of even starting to grow a monkey puzzle tree fills me kind of with fear, basically. A confession. I now have a monkey puzzle tree. It's about 3 years old, and you can find out how I got it if you listen to the Monkey Puzzle offshoot, which will be coming soon. My thanks to Andrea and Eduardo. I've learned so much from one casual remark about how the supposedly stolen monkey puzzle nuts would have been cooked. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do think about rating it on your podcast app. Partly because all podcast makers like to know if people are enjoying their work, but also because the algorithms pick up on such things and people who listen to other garden podcasts may get to hear about it. As ever, you can buy me a coffee to support the podcast. That coffee will not be spent on plants, but on costs such as the monthly fees for the editing system and the hosting platform. Our Plant Stories is an independent podcast presented and produced by me, Sally Flatman.